Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming out this morning. We're very excited about our keynote speaker this morning. So I am going to ask TMR member Jeff Bastable, who is the Director of Development and Philanthropy at the Honor Flight Syracuse, to come up and introduce Mike. For those of you who haven't really heard about Honor Flight, it's a nonprofit organization that honors American veterans by transporting them to Washington, D.C. to visit the national memorials that are dedicated to their service and sacrifice. And this service is at no cost to them. It's a wonderful, wonderful program. Honor Flight flies up to 4 missions each year to serve the veterans from the greater Syracuse area, northern New York State, and the Mohawk Valley. So it's a wonderful program, and I'm sure that Jeff would love to tell you more about it after Dr. Haney speaks. So here we go. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Great to be here on this chilly morning. Notice all the young parents are in Florida or the Bahamas with their children. So this is a senior group today, myself included. Well, today we're so fortunate to have someone with us who's a champion for the military service members, veterans, and their families in this country. Dr. Michael Haney is Vice Chancellor of Syracuse University, responsible for leading the university's veteran and military-connected programs, partnerships, and research initiatives. He also serves as the founding executive director of Syracuse University's well-known Institute for Veterans and Military Affairs, commonly referred to as IVMF, the nation's first interdisciplinary academic institute focused on informing and impacting the policy, economic, wellness, and social concerns of the nation's veterans and their families, a real distinction. A veteran himself, Mike served for 14 years as an officer in the United States Air Force. He completed his doctoral degree in entrepreneurship and business strategy at the University of Colorado at Boulder. As the Barnes Professor of Entrepreneurship at Syracuse University's Whitman School of Management, he is a sought-after advisor and speaker related to veterans' issues and entrepreneurship, and his academic research has been published in many of the world's leading entrepreneurship and business journals. Among his many appointments this past year, 2015, Veterans Administration Secretary Bob McDonald appointed Michael to serve as the Vice Chairman of the Veterans Administration's newly created MyVA External Advisory Committee, a group of national leaders and experts chartered to set the course for long-term excellence and reform in the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. Please give Michael Haney our warm welcome. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. How's everybody? It's a little chilly out there. Thrilled to be here. I was telling somebody that I think I spoke at Thursday Morning Roundtable 3 or 4 years ago. So it's great to be back because that gives me that window gives me plenty of time to have done something that I can come and talk to you about, so I don't have to repeat the same stuff. But again, I'm thrilled to be here. As my introduction indicated, I am a military veteran myself, and as a consequence of that, I fell into probably one of the best opportunities that I could imagine coming out of the military in 2006 at Syracuse University. Ironically, when I left military service in 2006, I was teaching at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and I decided that I really enjoyed this higher education thing and particularly teaching. And that's what motivated me to leave the military. You heard my PhD is in entrepreneurship. I'm an entrepreneurship professor. I came to SU not knowing anything about the university's history related to veterans. I was coming to SU because they have one of the best entrepreneurship programs in the country. But when I got here, I began to learn about the remarkable history that Syracuse University has related to veterans and military-connected communities, and that the entrepreneurship professor in me started to see some opportunities to do something really special at Syracuse University. And I think it's culminating in ultimately what I'm going to talk to you about today. But a good Air Force officer always has an introduction slide, but then you typically blow right past it. For those who are not aware, I think it's worth just taking a few minutes and giving you a sense of this remarkable history that I described. Syracuse University's connection to the military and the veterans communities really began in World War I, when the entire campus was mobilized to support World War I. That's actually a photo of our oldest building during World War I, with the student body of the university, all cadets at that time. Syracuse University's enrollment all the way up to World War II, which is where we'll jump next. Historically, SU was a regional teaching college, and up until World War II, never had an enrollment that exceeded about 5,000 students. But during World War I, not only was the campus mobilized, but SU was among the very first group of universities in the country to have an ROTC program. ROTC was created around this time. We were also one of a small group of universities selected to conduct pilot training for active duty military serving during World War I. So we had an airfield, we were training pilots. About 5,000 pilots were trained by Syracuse University, who went on to then fly those cool-looking biplanes in World War I. But importantly, somewhere in this picture, we've yet to find him, is an individual with a name that some of you might know, William Pearson Tully, who went on to become the Chancellor of Syracuse University during World War II, which is where we will go next, because it was a decision that was made by Chancellor Tully during World War II that fundamentally transformed Syracuse University into the institution that all of us know today. As I said, up until this point, SU was a school with an enrollment that bounced around somewhere between 4,500 and 5,000 students up until this point. Chancellor Tully, however, was asked by President Roosevelt to be part of, in about 1945, to be part of a small group of university professors from around the country who were given the challenge to literally figure out how to reintegrate and resocialize about 11.8 million returning World War II combat veterans into society. And what popped out of that little group of university leaders was something called the Servicemen's Readjustment Act, or more commonly known as the GI Bill. And that GI Bill, if you ask any historian, anthropologist, sociologist today, they will point back to that Servicemen's Readjustment Act as probably being one of the most important pieces of legislation in the history of this country, because it really did set up the industrial and technological revolution that happened after World War II that catapulted the United States to a global superpower. The GI Bill is responsible for training 650,000 engineers, 800,000 doctors, 21 Pulitzer Prize winners, multiple Nobel Prize winners, on and on and on. But as it relates to Syracuse University, this chancellor, William Tully, made a decision to offer admission to SU. And you can't read that tiny little letter up there, but I have that framed and hanging in my office. It's a one-page letter that he wrote in military format with a from subject in two line, from Syracuse University to returning war veterans, subject, your future. And in that one-page letter, he offered admission to Syracuse University to any returning World War II veteran that wanted a college degree. Even if you didn't have a high school diploma, we took you at Syracuse University. The enrollment of SU in the 1945 school year was about 5,200 students. The 1946-47 school year, the enrollment of Syracuse University was just over 17,000 students, 1 year. We borrowed Quonset huts from the Department of War, as it was called at the time, set them up all over campus and all over town, quite honestly, to house these veterans, to conduct classes. You know, the point of this story is it fundamentally transformed Syracuse University from this small regional teaching college to a national research institution. Our size today is almost identical to the size that Syracuse University was in the 2 or 3 years following World War II. Importantly, this was a decision that was not consistent with what many other college and university presidents made after World War II. In spite of the fact that in the 10 years after World War II, probably a full 50% of all undergraduate college students in America were World War II veterans because of the GI Bill, many of America's leading colleges and universities actually did not welcome World War II veterans. The president of Harvard was also a member of this little group that was put together by Roosevelt to come up with the GI Bill. And even though he supported, for example, being able to provide a financial means for this generation of veterans to go to college, he famously gave a speech after the war where he said, "It's wonderful that we're empowering this generation of veterans to, you know, to find a way to higher education. However, this lot," and that's the word, "this lot would not succeed at schools like Harvard University." He gave another speech 3 years later where he essentially took all that back. But the point of this story is there are only a handful of schools in all of America that took more returning World War II veterans than Syracuse University did. And there's not a single institution in New York State that welcomed more of what we eventually call the greatest generation than SU did. And what that did at Syracuse University was really touch off a whole series of and of points of connection to this particular community that are quite remarkable and ones that we don't talk about or we haven't historically talked about all that much or all that often. As you see, our ROTC program, our Army ROTC program, is the longest continuously running ROTC program in all of America today. Never shut down, founded when ROTC was originally created. We were also one of the first universities to have an Air Force ROTC program. We were in the first group of about 30 schools when the Air Force was formally created as a branch of military service after World War II. Our Whitman School of Management for 60 years has been home to something called the Defense Comptrollership Program. We have been training senior DOD financial managers, and these are typically majors, lieutenant colonels, in our Whitman School of Management for 60 years. They come to us for 14 months. They get an MBA from our business school, and they get a master's in public policy from our Maxwell School. There's not a senior DOD financial manager that is not a today the 2 stars and 3 stars who run the budget in the Pentagon. There's not a single one of them who's not a graduate of this particular program. And as I said, we've been running it for 60 years. Our Newhouse School of Communications is home to the DOD's military photojournalism program for 50 years. So all of the combat camera, all the photographers, the military multimedia journalists, they all get their training at our Newhouse School. And these are young enlisted kids who come to Syracuse for a 1 year, 30 credit hour program. Essentially, the program at Newhouse is sort of the top gun, if you will, of that particular career field. So, you know, when you see the Secretary of Defense on TV and there's a young military photographer trailing behind him taking pictures, odds are that young man or woman is a graduate of the MPJ program at the Newhouse School. Our Maxwell School is home to the National Security Studies Program. This is the global security studies program for new one and two star generals. They come to Syracuse for a multi-week program where professors from our Maxwell School come in and offer them courses on global security issues, global public policy issues. And I won't go through all of this, but the point is for a private Northeastern, pretty liberal-leaning university, SU has a history and a present that is very connected to both the military and veterans communities. I didn't know any of this when I arrived at SU, but one of the things I did know is that here I was, a military veteran, and now an entrepreneurship professor in the Whitman School, and my entire personal and professional life to that point had been military service. All of my friends were in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. Many of the young men and women I taught at the Air Force Academy were in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And one of the things that I did know is that this particular period of conflict in U.S. history, the longest sustained period of conflict in U.S. history, is generating, and I don't know a different way to say this, was at the time generating military veterans with disabilities at a rate unprecedented in U.S. history. About 30% of anybody who's put on a uniform since 9/11 will leave the military with an enduring physical or psychological disability connected to their service. And I had an idea to do something about that in my own little way at Whitman. So I pitched to the dean of the business school at the time, who's a gentleman named Mel Stith, who has since retired, but Mel himself was a Vietnam-era Army vet, starting a program to bring severely wounded service members, post 9/11 vets, to Syracuse over the summer to train them to become business owners. Program called that we called the Entrepreneurship Bootcamp for Veterans with Disabilities. It's going to be a social venture of the business school, meaning that's code for we were going to go out and raise the money so we could fund it on their behalf. And it was going to be my little thing that I did over the summer. We did not realize that after we delivered that first program that we would have interest from other universities around the country to be part of that. So the next year we expanded that program in a partnership with UCLA and Florida State and Texas A&M and then LSU and then the University of Connecticut and then Purdue and then Cornell. And you know, all of a sudden, we saw an opportunity to leverage what we do well at the university, teach, train, and inspire to make a difference for vets and their families. So that led to another program a year later for military family members, specifically caregivers for severely wounded service members. And then another program a year later in partnership with the U.S. Small Business Administration to train women veterans in business ownership, a program we call VWISE. They all have these acronyms, by the way, because that's how we name things. Veteran Women Igniting the Spirit of Entrepreneurship, that we deliver in different U.S. cities all over the all over the country. And at some point in 2010, my little part-time hobby over the summer had turned into a pretty significant portfolio of work. But we also recognize an opportunity. You know, here we are at a university that has this remarkable and really glorious history related to this community going back all the way to World War I, and here we are in the present doing contemporary work that is truly impactful for this community. And we started looking around higher education at what other colleges and universities were doing related to engaging and empowering this particular generation of veterans specifically. And to my great surprise, every other university that we looked at had some kind of an institute for national security, national defense, counterterrorism, but nowhere in America, nowhere in all of higher education was there an interdisciplinary academic institute focused on the nation's veterans and their families. And for me, that was a big miss. Not only was it a big miss from the perspective of that community deserves higher education's attention, it was also a big miss from a taxpayer perspective. For example, not many people realize the Department of Veterans Affairs is the second largest federal agency in all of government. They have $153 billion a year budget, only behind the Department of Defense. We should be leveraging the intellectual capital of higher education to make, for example, the VA a better place, not just for veterans, but for taxpayers. Why isn't higher ed looking at these issues? The point of this drawn-out story is that in about 2010, I put together a pitch, if you will, to take to the chancellor of the university at the time, Nancy Kanner, with the logic being we should be the university that creates higher education's first interdisciplinary academic institute focused on vets and their families. Nancy was supportive in the way that I've come to learn leaders in higher education have to be supportive, and that is, she said, that is a great idea. If you can go out and find the money for it, you can do it. Luckily, SU had an existing relationship with JP Morgan Chase at the time that had nothing to do with veterans. It had to do with some technology programs, and I'll say candidly, at that same time, JP Morgan Chase had gotten themselves in a little public trouble in this community because they were illegally foreclosing on the homes of military veterans and serving military members in violation of federal law, and it was all over the newspaper. So again, the entrepreneurship professor and me saw that as an opportunity. So I found myself in the office of the chief operating officer at JP Morgan Chase, and again, with my good Air Force officer 40 PowerPoint slide deck all ready to go, I never had to take that presentation out of my briefcase. I told him what we wanted to do, and the meeting lasted about 7 minutes, and he gave us about $7.5 million to get the Institute for Veterans and Military Families off the ground. The institute was created, as I said, in 2010, 2011, by the time we actually got it off the ground. But the institute started with a good idea, a couple little programs we were running that I told you about, and about four people. Today, the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University is the fastest growing academic unit at all of the institution, a full-time team, professional staff of just over 60 folks now, generating new revenue. And what I mean by new revenue is external funding from sources outside Syracuse University to fund the work that we do in excess of $25 million or so a year. Last year, we brought in more external dollars to SU in this community than any school or college at SU. And as much as my friend Mark Coyle, our new athletic director, doesn't like me to say this publicly, we brought in more money to Syracuse last year than did the athletic department at Syracuse University, so, which is a nice thing. I say all that to say the institute and everything the institute does is entirely externally funded, meaning it is an institute of Syracuse University, but it's what we call a soft money institute, meaning we have to, all of the salaries of all of those people, all the work that we do, the programs that we run for veterans and their families, all is funded externally. And importantly, everything we do for veterans, we fund on their behalf. So last year, and this program isn't about the institute, but it's an important setup for the building that I'll talk about. Last year, when we started the institute, we were running vocational training and transition programs for veterans at a scale of about 1,000-1,500 vets a year going through those programs. Last year, we put just about 32,000 active duty military members, veterans, and their families through programs run out of the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at SU. Our chancellor gave a talk to our board of trustees a little while ago, and he framed this for me in a way that I had never thought of. Each and every year, we are making, if you will, more Syracuse University alumni of veterans and active duty service members that are going through our programs at a scale of about 2 to 3 times more than Syracuse University graduates and students. And within 10 years, we'll have more alumni of the university who are military and veteran connected as a consequence of the IVMF's programs than we have in total alumni through the traditional pathways, if you will, through Syracuse. And, you know, I think it certainly, hopefully, does honor to, you know, Chancellor Tully and his vision. But the point of all of this is to get to Chancellor Severud's arrival about 2 years ago. All of this was happening sort of quietly and under the radar until Ken Severud arrived. And when Chancellor Severud arrived, one of the things that he was focused on as someone from the outside looking in are what are the things that truly differentiate Syracuse University from its peers and its aspirational peers? What are the things that we can point to as true pockets of differentiated excellence at Syracuse University? And one of the things he identified was both our history in this space and our current work in the veterans community. And when this is a photo of his inauguration in April, it will be 2 years this coming April, where I'm sitting in Hendricks Chapel listening to him give a speech, and people think I knew what he was going to say. I was as surprised as anybody when he laid out 4 priorities for his chancellorship, for his entire chancellorship. And he got around to priority number 4, and he said that, you know, once again, Syracuse University will be the national leader, the national exemplar for how higher education engages and empowers the nation's veterans and their families. What came of this was an institution, you know, so the institute moved from being an island to being a hub of connection across the entire institution. Each of the schools and colleges today at Syracuse University have been challenged to develop new programs, both student programs and outreach programs focused on veterans and their families. Each of the deans of our schools and colleges now have metrics that they have to report to the chancellor with regard to student veteran enrollment. We've been challenged to double the number of student veterans attending Syracuse University each and every year over the next 5 years. We have zeroed out the cost of tuition for post 9/11 veterans at Syracuse University. And what I mean by that is a veteran, Syracuse University, a private institution, tuition around $41,000 a year. Post 9/11 GI Bill covers about $17,500 in tuition. Post 9/11 GI Bill is the most generous educational entitlement that's been afforded to vets since World War II. It will fully fund a 4-year college education at any state institution in America, but it's capped for private schools. It's capped in New York State at $17,500. But we have made the decision that we are going to cover the difference for any post 9/11 vet that wants to come to SU so that we can have no financial barrier to their attendance at Syracuse University. I won't go through, there's a whole host of other things. Chancellor's also challenged me with 100% employment of every student veteran graduating from Syracuse University. That's a tall order, but we are one of the only universities in the country that now has a full-time career services officer whose only job it is to find post-degree employment for every one of our student vets. And where all of this is going ultimately, and you know, I have to throw, we become a stop on the federal official tour. So last year, this is a photo of Secretary of Defense Ash Carter, who came up and gave a speech, met with the IVMF team, and then gave a speech at Syracuse last year. But last year we had the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dempsey, the Secretary of the Army, the Administrator of the SBA, and the Secretary of Labor all come up and talk about veterans-related issues at Syracuse University. We have a list of federal officials in waiting who, I think we have a couple Navy admirals coming up soon. But the point is, this work has also brought to Syracuse University, I think, a unique national distinction, because we clearly are, and I can get on another soapbox that is not part of this talk, but, you know, I will stand here and say, as someone both doing this work but in Syracuse, but somebody who also has a national lens on it, higher education has, I'll point the finger back to my own community. Higher education has largely been on the sideline and over the course of the last 15 years at war related to vets and their families. It is a huge moral and ethical failing of higher ed related to this particular community. VA has paid out about $52 billion to date in post 9/11 GI Bill tuition to colleges and universities since the GI Bill was established in 2009, the post 9/11 GI Bill. About 50% of that $52 billion has gone to online for-profit universities. And that is because traditional colleges and universities have not done the small things that they need to do to create an atmosphere and a climate and programs that support bringing veterans as students to their campuses. If you look at the top 25, take U.S. News and World Report's top 25 schools in America, which I did, and pull data from the VA on how many post 9/11 vets attend those top 25 schools compared to their total undergraduate enrollment, you can barely get to 0.5%. It is a huge missed opportunity, not just for veterans, but for this country, that this generation of veterans has largely been shut out of traditional higher education. And it's because they're afraid of us, by the way. We have two scholars at Syracuse who did a study funded by the NSF on perceptions of traditional higher ed among this generation of transitioning service members. And you read this study, and it's heartbreaking because they ask questions about what do you perceive to be the barriers, young Marine, young soldier, for you pursuing a college degree after you leave the military. And you know what the number one barrier they cite is? Fear. There are quotes in this study where they say, I have more apprehension about setting foot on a college campus than I do about getting sent back to Afghanistan for a year. I mean, that's a horrible, horrible thing. This was the soapbox I wasn't going to get on, but I jumped on it really quick, didn't I? All of this gets to what it's the setup for what I was asked to come here and talk about. But these are important issues, so I think they're good context for now what we're trying to do. Everyone is familiar with the upstate revitalization process and the Central New York submission to that process, which was successful. Part of that submission included the opportunity to leverage what has been built at Syracuse University to really work to position both Syracuse and Central New York as truly the nation's hub of thought leadership, of programs, of innovation, if you will, impacting the nation's veterans and their families. And that really is embodied by what we're trying to do with what we're calling at the moment the National Veterans Resource Complex. We have a commitment from the university, its trustees, and in partnership with the state to build on the Syracuse University campus a national facility focused on leveraging higher education, private sector partnership to create programs, resources, research, thought leadership, innovation that will impact the post-service life course of this nation, this generation of veterans and future generations of veterans. It will be a first-of-its-kind facility in America. It will really serve two purposes. It will serve a campus purpose in that it will become the forever home to the Institute for Veterans and Military Families. As I said, the fastest growing academic unit at SU. But it will also consolidate in that building many of the university's other military and veteran connected programs. So we will move both our ROTC programs, which right now are housed in not so great space in Archibald Gym, into this building. We will build a state-of-the-art student veteran resource center, student veteran technology labs in this building. We'll bring our Vet Success on Campus program into this building, and several other. And we've also created at SU for the first time a one-stop admissions and enrollment center just for military veterans. That right now is housed in University College. It's an innovation in higher ed, one place, one person who can make decisions for student vets, from everything from an admissions decision, but also transfer credit evaluation, also financial aid, et cetera. But you know, that will move into this building as well. But then the other part of the building, and what do I have? Yeah, here you go. The other part of the building will be the nationally focused piece. So what we know, quite honestly, is possible is that, you know, this idea of situating Syracuse and Central New York as this national hub comes with it all kinds of opportunity to bring thought leadership conferences, research conferences, academic events and convenings to Syracuse University and to Central New York in a way that we can't do right now. You know, so for example, I told you about our VWISE program, Veteran Women Igniting Spirit of Entrepreneurship. That's a program run by the IVMF at Syracuse University, where we bring together groups of 200 to 250 women vets in different U.S. cities around the country, in a conference-style training event, in conference-style hotels. Matter of fact, we just wrapped up about 3 weeks ago VY Charlotte, which we held at, you know, the big Sheraton Conference Center and Hotel in Charlotte, North Carolina. Each one of those comes with about 250 to 300 hotel room nights over the course of 4 or 5 days. We do four of those a year to the tune of $4 or $5 million that we spend running those conferences. We've never done one in Syracuse, New York. And we haven't done one in Syracuse, New York because we can't accommodate that event on our campus at Syracuse University, because every one of our classrooms, every one of our convening spaces, et cetera, is booked from 7:30 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, 5 days a week. Part of the hope of this new facility is that we are going to be able to bring new and keep existing conferences, convenings, trainings that we do for the Department of Defense, Department of Veterans Affairs, or for our private sector partners, do them here in Syracuse, New York, so the dollars stay here in Syracuse, New York, jobs are created in Syracuse, New York, but also bring distinction and honestly a differentiation to this community relative to others in terms of a focus on this nationally important community. This facility itself is going to be a very special project for Syracuse University. If you look in the 1950, I think it's the 1951 SU yearbook, there's an interview in that yearbook from with Chancellor Tully. And one of the things that he said in this interview was what he was most proud of was the decision he made relative to vets during World War II. And he said he hoped in his lifetime that Syracuse University would build a building on the campus in honor of that legacy. Obviously, that building never got built. But I think it's, you know, somewhere Chancellor Tully is smiling, knowing what we're trying to do now at the university. When I said this is going to be a special project, we have done something that Syracuse University has not done in a long, long time, in that we announced shortly before Christmas a national design competition for an architect to design this particular facility. We hired a woman named Martha Thorne, who is the director of something called the Pritzker Prize, which is essentially the Nobel Prize for Architecture internationally, to design and manage this competition for us. We initially started with a pool of 28 of the most renowned and leading architects in the United States. That process in January resulted in a down select to three finalist firms to design this National Veterans Resource Complex. You can see the names of those firms right there on the slide. To give you a sense of the significance of these three finalists, there are five finalists right now to win the commission to design the Obama Presidential Library in Chicago, and each of these three firms are among the five finalists also to design the Obama Presidential Library. We will select an architect for this project in late April. I think the target is April 28th. And then we will immediately move into the design and construction phase of the project. The first question anybody always asks is, where is this building going to be? And there's there's an address on another slide, but I'll describe it. The easiest way I found to describe it to people is, you know where Varsity Pizza is? Right across the street. So it's going to be on the Waverly block, essentially at that intersection of, what is that, Krause and Waverly, where and some of you may have ties to this building, so I apologize ahead of time, but it is going to be where Hoople Hall is now, which is an older sort of 1950s elementary school looking building. Hoople Hall will go away, and that's where the National Veterans Resource Complex will be. We hope to have the building built, opened, cutting a ribbon in spring of 2018. So for Syracuse University, that is a very, very fast project. But it's exciting for our future. I think it's exciting for the nation's veterans and their families. And it's exciting for Syracuse University because I think it continues a very storied legacy and tradition that, as you heard today, goes all the way back to World War I. And as a veteran, it has this project has a very personal meaning to me. Because I'll end with, and I don't even know when I was supposed to end, but she stood up with it, so that probably means I was supposed to end. I'll end with the fact that, you know, I think one of the things that all Americans, need to reflect on a little bit is that we've been at war for 15 years. And what we don't talk about enough is that this war, this longest war, was the first one under an all-volunteer force military. And what that means by the numbers is that about 0.56% of all Americans, 0.56% of all Americans have shouldered the burden of the last 15 years at war on behalf of the overwhelming majority. It's a tiny, tiny minority. The challenge with that is now that group of military veterans is home, they're a minority wherever they go. They are the most underrepresented minority in this country, and very few share that experience of military service, particularly during a time of war, and it can be a very, very isolating experience. And part of why I'm excited about this particular project is it will hopefully draw those folks out in a way that sends a message of support and acknowledgement. I was struggling to choose a word because it's not that any of them are looking for anything more than to to simply be acknowledged. So with that, I'll stop, and maybe there's time for questions. I don't know.
I find the whole concept very interesting. My biggest concern is that you become a silo on a very active campus. And what are your plans to truly integrate the returning veterans into a community of not only SU, but of the city?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. But my response would be, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the silo you describe was actually happening at SU, because the institute was growing up sort of isolated from everything else that was happening at Syracuse. That all changed. So you heard me introduce as the vice chancellor of Syracuse University. Syracuse, its history has only ever had one vice chancellor. So the model is a president and chancellor, and then the vice chancellor and provost, and then everybody else. One of the things that Chancellor Severud did when he decided that this area, veterans, military-connected students, et cetera, was going to be a strategic focus for the entire university was create for the first time a second vice chancellor role at SU. With wearing that hat, my job is to make sure that every school, college, institute, center, staff function, et cetera, is focused on this particular issue. For example, staff is a great example. Up until about a year ago, Syracuse University had no idea how many faculty and staff at SU had ever served in the military. So we start asking that question. We ask folks to self-identify, and it turns out there are hundreds and hundreds of faculty and staff at SU who are military veterans. We've brought those folks out of the woodwork, asked them to help us be mentors to now our student vets, whether you work in the steam plant or a faculty member in Maxwell. It really has become an all of the institution focus. And I think, to your point, it's incredibly important. It's also incredibly important that we bridge our work to the community, as you said. And there's my friend Melissa Spicer sitting right there. Melissa and I, our new thing is we have lunch once. So Melissa runs ClearPath for veterans out in Chittenango. If you have not been out there, I would encourage you to go out there. It's a phenomenal community-connected facility and set of programs focused on veterans in this particular community. New York State is the I mentioned an all-volunteer military. That means you got to raise your hand. And New York State is number 5 in the country in terms of states to contributing to the all-volunteer military. That means that we're also in the top 5 of where veterans live in this country. And most of the veterans in New York State are concentrated in upstate New York. The focus of the work that we do at SU and the Institute and at the center has profound implications for what we do in this state and in our communities. You know, truth be told, and being very candid, it's probably not best, though, that Syracuse University is the executor out in our local communities. It's probably best that we build bridges and partnerships to community-connected organizations that can take what we've learned, what we've developed, et cetera, and execute in the community. And I think that's the model that will best leverage what we're trying to do, the thought leadership, the research, the programmatic pieces, and bridge them out into the community and across the state.
You mentioned that 1 out of 3 veterans from the last 15 years comes back with some sort of a disability. Many of those veterans are going to be coming back with psychological disabilities. What are you going to do that's going to be special for those veterans?
So this is obviously a huge challenge, and it's not a huge challenge just in this community. It's a challenge in all communities. So I think one of the things that, to my soapbox about higher ed, one of the things that, that we have to do is create a means to... The other statistic I mentioned is, you know, this idea that a very, very small minority have that shared experience with this generation of veterans of serving, you know, during a time of war. So one of the things that we have to do is develop programs and resources to educate non-veterans on the military experience, the challenges associated with sometimes re-socializing and reintegrating. You know, so, you know, Colonel Ron Novak, retired Ron Novak, who's sitting there with that beautiful Syracuse orange tie on. Ron works for me. He's the director of our Office of Veteran and Military Affairs at SU. One of the things that Ron is working on right now is actually developing a cultural competency training program for non-veterans who work at SU and also out into the community, so that, because we're trying to create an environment at SU where veterans feel like they can go talk to whoever they're comfortable with about their experience, challenges that they may be having related to, you know, mental health, et cetera. But those conversations don't work unless the receiver on the other end has some familiarity and cultural competence related to what that military experience was all about. You know, so we're starting a program called the Orange Door Program. We've had, and it sounds silly, but we've had these orange door hangers made with a silhouette of a service member and a student. And we're asking our faculty, our staff, to go through this cultural competency training program voluntarily and then further volunteer to raise their hand to be a student veteran resource across the campus. So the idea is wherever you see one of those orange door hangers behind that door is somebody who not only took the time to understand who you are, but is now saying, my door is open to any student veteran. You know, I think the other part of this is we have to leverage our intellectual capital to be a partner with the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, on tackling a lot of the issues associated with PTSD and some of the other mental health challenges. You know, for example, we have a world-class School of Social Work at Syracuse University, who studies things like trauma and how people respond and recover from trauma, you know, and they are chomping at the bit to get engaged in this space. Matter of fact, you know, I recently had a meeting with the dean and some of their senior leadership, and they're looking at how they develop certificate programs in resilience, trauma studies, et cetera. That they could offer to social workers around the country so that they essentially can be trained up on how to support this generation of veterans as they come home. But still a lot of work to be done in this area. Well, hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you?
As you know, I'm as a veteran, I'm very excited about this complex, and I'm looking forward to what it's really going to do for veterans in the region. Speaking about ClearPath and our other veteran organizations who do outstanding work here, I'm wondering what we're doing to get this information out to the public, because as you mentioned, there are many veterans in the area. I myself know a number of veterans and am involved in other veteran organizations, but we really don't know much about it, and we want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure it's successful. And for all of us, having Syracuse be a mecca for veterans to get assistance, whether it's academia, whether it's workforce, whether it's, you know, help with your health and wellness. We're excited about this, but I think getting all veterans involved throughout the region, it would be a great way to push this. So what are we doing about that?
Well, you've hit on one of my biggest frustrations and challenges. You know, I guess my flippant answer is I have PowerPoint presentation, will travel. But, you know, we really struggle on the community. You know, even the story I told you, I'm curious, how many people in the room knew the story of SU's history related to veterans in the military? You know, so maybe 50-ish percent. You know, to me, that is a huge and ongoing frustration to me, that as a university who has the number one communication school in the world, by the way, that we really do struggle telling our story. It's frustrating. And, you know, I think one of the things that, So the reason we did a national design competition, quite honestly, is to your point. You know, we're trying to really explore how we get the word out broadly about what it is we're trying to do. And quite honestly, communicating to the veterans community is important. That said, we do that better than we do communicating outside the veterans community. That's where we typically fall down. You know, for me, this is only successful, and I should have made this point. This is not a veterans building. This is a university and campus community facility where everybody is going to be welcome. And the reason I say it like that is, to me, one of the aims of this facility is to bring veterans and military connected, you know, whether service members, military family, to bring those folks together with non-veterans and non-military connected folks. That's why we're putting we're putting a cafe in there for that, in this building, the ground floor of this building, for that very specific reason. Because we want to draw people together so that they have natural opportunities to interact with veterans. I'd be open to any suggestions that you have, but this is a national first. This is a big deal. This is something really, truly special that's happening in this particular community in the context of this facility. And, you know, what we realize is simply issuing press releases from Syracuse University about what we're doing is certainly not serving the purpose that you're describing, you know, that purpose being twofold, informing folks, but also getting people excited. You know, I think that's the other piece of it.
Just a couple of quick comments. As a nephew and cousin of veterans of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, I'm very pleased with what I see happening here at Syracuse University. And then as a former dean of the School of Social Work and a former president, I have become very, very inundated with these warm fuzzies about what we do and what we have not done for veterans. I'm recalling a moment at a Memorial Day program at Megarez College about 3 years ago, at which we invited then a lieutenant to speak to our faculty and staff on Memorial Day. And we had, on that very small occasion, several members of the faculty and staff to acknowledge publicly in that small gathering that they were veterans of Vietnam. And there was utter amazement and a great deal of emotion among many of them because they had never publicly acknowledged that before. And I think what you're doing is going to be a great, great moment for Syracuse University for a long time to come.
I'll leave names out of it, but the number of times I've seen that. So I was invited to speak shortly after I assumed this vice chancellor role to the faculty of one of our schools and colleges, and just about what this is all about, what we're going to be doing. And after I was finished, spontaneously, one of the folks in the audience stood up. Turned his back to me to look at his faculty colleagues, and it's emotional for me to this day because he started to cry, and he told the rest of his faculty colleagues that he was a Vietnam era veteran. He'd never shared that before. That to me is part of the power of what we're trying to do here.
This has been really enlightening to me, so thanks for all the background and history. But when you said that one of the main barriers to joining an academic community for a veteran is fear, first thing you said was fear, and I was thinking the educational, the academic community may be afraid of veterans.
No.
You hear about the PTSD, and you say one of three come back sort of with injuries or mm-hmm. life-changing circumstances. You think of the Wounded Warrior Project and all the fate of the American sniper and so mm-hmm. on. You get all these reports in the media, and it sounds like a lot of what you're doing is to overcome something like that, but that the exclusion or marginalization of veterans may be intentional.
Yeah. So One, to be clear, when I was talking about fear, I wasn't talking about faculty and staff. I was talking about veterans, their apprehension about not feeling welcome and fitting in. The other side of that coin, though, is to your point, the reason that they have fear of not being welcome and not fitting in is at least they perceive that there is some level of hostility, worst case, but, you know, best case, simply apprehension or some level of concern about having veterans in our classrooms on our campus. You know, I can tell you one of my most pleasant surprises. I fully expected that when our chancellor declared at his inauguration that this area of focus was going to be one of the things that defines his chancellorship, I fully expected some challenges on our campus. And the reality is, I have found not only acceptance but people embracing this initiative in places that you just would not expect. You know, our Maxwell School, you know, nobody's ever accused our Maxwell School of being the hotbed of conservative thought. It's quite the opposite. While you know, this initiative is certainly not changing the politics of those folks, it has been inspiring, honestly, to see the distinction that a lot of folks make between how they feel, for example, about the military versus veterans and what we're doing for individual Americans who happen to have worn the uniform. So I think, you know, and this really goes back to the communications point. I think that barrier of fear is truly, at least at SU, it's truly a perceived barrier, because the reality is, if you talk to, there's lots of things we don't do right. I'm not standing up here and saying that we have solved every problem and we're doing everything right by every student vet that attends SU, but as a group, if you talk to them, they will tell you they feel pretty darn supported. I mean, student veterans at Syracuse University are the only group of students that we treat like basketball players, student athletes. They get to register for classes before registration even opens for everybody else, right? I mean, I can give you this laundry list of, you know, we have done a lot to address the things that are the basis for that fear and apprehension. Challenge is, we have to tell the story. If we don't tell the story, the perception, will continue to fester. So, all that's not to say that there are probably quietly folks around campus who wish we were focused on other things, and that's fine. That's human nature. But, you know, at the end of the day, this has been one of the more uniting rather than dividing issues that we've tackled since Chancellor Severud has arrived.
I want to thank Mike so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate your time. It was a very, very wonderful presentation.